You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode
549.
Next week, story time. But until then, let's talk about some news and some other stuff you can use on the Punk News Podcast, on the White and Blue. We're coming, transmitting to you on Friday afternoon. All the youths sitting in the booths want to hear us on their Bluetooths. Ain't that the truth? Listen, I know I'm talking loose. And M. Moore's looking out the window seeing a moose. But we always win and we never lose, because this is the Punk News coming straight to you. Ginsburg, not Allen Ginsburg, Jack Kerouac, you know, with all the cool cats, sitting in for John Gentile this week. You know, we got our coffee cups and our cigarettes and our black and white striped shirts. Hallie Bullitt, would you want to be a beatnik, or does that seem exhausting, tiresome, and corny even back then?
I think any scene that, like, at the time was just like the place to be, I would have liked to have been a part of. There's like something, like, you know, it was so exciting to be a beatnik. When that was like at its height. So yes, I would absolutely have loved to have been a beatnik.
And more, would you have liked to be in a beatnik?
I think so. It seems fun. Like, you could travel and piss people off just by kind of, you know, being. So I think that would be good.
See, I think I might hate beatniks, honestly. I think I'd be like, all you people are insufferable and selfish, you know. Not me. I'm a greaser. I'm not... You know, I know where it's at, fixing my hot rod and, you know, having a bouffant, you know, in my leather jacket, basically being Fonzie, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a question. How do you put Fonzie? You know, was Fonzie actually a good guy? You know what I mean? Because he's always getting Richie out of jams, you know, and he's always protecting the town. But, you know, they always, you know, he's got like 19 girlfriends all the time. Is that a fair and open polyamorous situation, or is he using women against each other to their own detriment?
It's such a good question, and I would have to, like, go. So I loved Fonzie. You have to understand. Like, I loved the Fonz. I thought that was, like, so funny. Every time he hit the jukebox to make it work, like, I thought I was going to, like, fall off my family's, like, couch. Like, I loved that shit. But, like, so many things that I grew up with, Dukes of Hazzard, Eddie Murphy's like Raw and Delirious, like so much of that stuff that I've revisited, I've been so horrified and been like, wait, how was I like laughing about this when I was like a child? Like, why did I think this was so great? So I don't know. I mean, the Eddie Murphy stuff, some of it holds up and some of it's just so upsetting and so problematic. So I can't speak to the Fonz. I can only speak to my past love of the Fonz. I would have to like go rewatch that stuff to see just like how much of like a shit womanizer he actually was. At the time, I thought it was fine. I was like, you do you, Fonz. 5-year-old Hallie has no problem with this.
I think I will defend Fonz just because I don't want to destroy a childhood joy. I will say that the Fonz has always been clear. We're not in a relationship. If you want to go out, we can go out, but we're not in a relationship. But she's putting everything on the table. And it's interesting, back in the 40s and 50s, people would date lots of people at once. But maybe it wouldn't be as serious as things get now, or maybe it was, but nobody knew about it, or everybody knew about it, but no one talked about it, you know? So they might date by, like, going to the sock hop and, like, maybe kissing or something, you know what I mean? But now if people are, quote, dating, there's a little bit more action going on, if you know what I'm saying. So, but what's interesting is back in the 40s and 50s, people would date lots of people, and then going steady would mean you would have one girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever. And now people say, well, as long as you let everyone else know that you're dating lots of people, that's cool. So it's interesting how things have kind of come full circle, if you will.
You're right. Maybe Fonz is like a very modern man. Like, Fonz would have done very well on Tinder, right?
Yeah.
There's like Tinder, like, even the one that people use anymore. Did I just like date myself? Is anyone even on Tinder anymore?
Yeah, I think people are on Tinder, sure.
Okay. All right. And more, you're young. Do you know what are the young folks using to meet one another? To
Fonzer.
Fonzer. Yes.
The last time I think it was Tinder, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm kind of out of the loop with that because I don't have Wi-Fi, so everything I do on my computer. So I don't really know what the app is, but I think Tinder's a safe bet.
All right. Just as long as I didn't sound like super geriatric when I was like, all the kids use Tinder these days.
Don't the kids still use Dial-A-Date?
Friendster. They're all meeting each other on Friendster.
And more, if you could be a part of any scene circa 2000 BC through now, what scene would you be a part of?
Well, like scene like...
Punk. Disco, oh. Funk, suffragettes, you know, I don't know, inventing the wheel. What scene would you be a part of?
Oh, there's so many good options. Like, can I pick multiple, or is it like I have to?
No, you could pick one and one only.
I'm gonna go.
Witch burners.
Sorry.
Witch burners in Salem, Massachusetts.
I'm going with Punk All the Way, but like I can time travel and go like back and freak people out. Like go back to
You mean like you've got a Black Flag record before Black Flag recorded anything, and you're like, check this out, Keith Morris. Is that what you mean? what do you mean?
Well, like kind of like that, and then like go back to like the Salem witch trials and just like show up and like have like the full like you know. Like the patches and the like the colored hair and
M, don't do that. They're gonna burn you at the stake. Don't go back to Salem dressed like that. You'll die. But, don't do it, Em.
You know, kind of stuff like that. Just to freak people out. Just to make them think they're losing. Oh no, like I'd like the witch finder general or whatever. Like, you know, he's asleep and then I just like tap on the window and like hiss at him and then leave.
What is up with people burning witches? If a woman's too ugly, they burn her. If she's too hot, they burn her. Those women can't win in Salem, Massachusetts. You know what I'm saying?
No, it's so shitty. And actually, like, I question this all the time because there's just so many things that we've realized, like, we thought were funny that, like, really aren't funny. Like, like white people wearing blackface, like, not funny. And, like, I keep wondering, like, when is, like, people dressing as witches for Halloween going to be, like, put on this list? Because witches are not – that's not – I mean, I guess there's a whole other history and folklore of witches, and maybe that's what, like, people are, like – paying tribute to when they dress as a witch, but there's always something a little creepy to me when people dress as witches for Halloween. I'm a little bit like, aren't you just like dressing as like an idea that was used to just like murder women for like a long time? But I don't know, I'm probably like taking it too seriously, but I like the idea that you asked Em what scene she would like to be a part of, and what she told you is how she wants to go back in time to torment like evildoers.
and more writing the wrongs of the galaxy one year at a time by her time travel dimension. Well said,
one, and more. One creepy shoulder tap at a time.
Yes.
So next week it's story week, which I'm very excited about. We're each going to do one story, one happy story, one sad and or poignant story, and then one crazy story. Should we do happy, sad, poignant, crazy, or crazy, sad, poignant, funny? Did I say that right? Yeah.
Crazy, sad, poignant, funny.
All right. So I think I agree with that. So, well, actually, maybe I don't. Maybe we should end on the crazy story. Hallie Bullitt, what do you think?
I don't know. I still don't have any idea what I'm going to talk about. So I let's see. Crazy, fun. No. Yeah, maybe end up, well... crazy and funny. I don't know. The lines are very blurred for me between crazy and funny. Yeah, end with crazy, right?
I that's what I'm thinking. What we're also going to do is we're each going to get a number and we're going to roll a dice each round. And so then we'll see with our witch powers, we will determine what order people will go in. So that's next week. Also, I'm launching my limited run Leftover Crack podcast with Brad Logan. The first episode is an interview with Aura Babajian, the drummer of Leftover Crack and the Slackers and SFH and a whole bunch of other bands, and Ari Up's drummer for a little minute or so. So that's Architects of Self-Destruction, the podcast, supporting the book Architects of Self-Destruction, The Oral History of Leftover Crack, out August 10 via Rare Bird Lit. So be sure to check that out. And there's something else I wanted to mention with regard to that, but I can't remember what it was. So anyways, check that out. Lots happening at Punk News. And the Punk News podcast. So let's read some mail. You can always use that podcast at punknews.org. This is from Thomas, and Tom, it's called Demo Tape. John G., you did nothing wrong trying to sell that tape. It's just capitalism, bro. I'm getting the feel that Laura Jane is just a little pissed about it. She has a right to be, but that doesn't taint the value of the product. As for all these retweeters, they're just bandwagoning like people do, especially with influential types. P.S. Who cares? Just sell it. Well, Thomas, thank you for the support, and I appreciate it. And, yeah. This is from Frank. An underappreciated aspect of vinyl is the label. I think the label art is as important as the cover art. Maybe it's more important because you look at it more while the record plays. What is your favorite label art? I love the simplicity of Discord labels and how Fat Records will use cartoon type pictures. From Frank.
I don't know what to say about that. John, what are your thoughts?
I will say two labels that have very strong aesthetics, which are probably my two favorite labels. I don't know if a label is more important. Like, I do think album art is very important because when you're listening to an album, the album art does kind of like play in your brain. Like when I listen to Back in Black, like it seems like a black album to me. When I listen to like Thunderstruck, Razor's Edge, it sounds silver to me just because the album cover is silver, both AC/DC classics. So I do think album art is very important and it almost makes music multimedia, even though by its very essence, it's only one media, not multimedia. So I don't know if cover art's more important than label, but I do enjoy a good label. I will say the two best labels are Crass Records label, just because they're so distinctive and so many people copied them, which kind of made it less special, but it was very distinctive. But also Alternative Tentacles. On the flip side, they've got the AT Bat, which still looks rad as hell, still looks cool, designed by Jello's main guy, not Norman. What's his name? Winston Smith. So yeah, those are my two favorite labels for sure. And more.
Yes.
Do you have label preference or do you not care?
I don't really care. I do like the Alternative Tentacles logo. It's really, really cool. But yeah, it's just kind of like, oh, if this is a band I usually don't really pay attention to what label they're on unless it's, you know, like, oh, they're on this and it raises a red flag, but that doesn't really happen.
You know, I'm not sure if I'm a fan of like a whole lot of art. Like sometimes we'll have like total. I'll tell you what is cool when one of the labels like references the album art or something like that, but isn't just the same as the album art. You know, that's the way to do it. Yeah. Like it's another element. That's what I'll say. But yeah. All right, cool. Anyway, you can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. We love getting your mail. Let's play a song and come back and hit the news. Who's got a song? And more, kick it.
All right. So, today, so there's a band, and Hallie, I'm pretty sure you've played them before, but I'm going to play them again. So, they're called The Muslims.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And they just got signed to Epitaph. So, the song that they released is Fuck These Fucking Fascists. And that's my song.
Fuck these fucking fascists, they can kiss our asses. Fucking fascist, fucking family and friends. If they defend a fucking fascist, they can fuck off till they're dead. I've been watching you roll up to the pillar. You've been blending and wet. fucking fascist. Fuck their family and friends. If they're the fucking fascist, they can fuck up till they're dead. Why try too hard if you're really full of wine? Why ask pride? Show your colors on your tent. Can't be wise.
Yes, we know.
Fuck these fucking fascists. Fuck their family and friends. If they defend a fucking fascist, they can fuck up till they're dead.
And that was the Muslims, who are different than the Muslims from about 15 years ago or 10 years ago, that are now called Soft Skeleton, which is not a good name. Anyways, that's the new Muslims. The Muslims, not the new Muslims, it's just the Muslims. Anyway, that's them on Epitaph Records. Let's hit the news. Here's some surprise news that punk news broke, but no one cared, and then got broken again, and everyone cared. Off is back. Everyone thought Off was gone. And in fact, on Punk News Podcast episode 500, Keith Morris, Off's front man, kind of suggests that Off was over. And we actually discussed this live on the podcast or afterwards. We decided not to do a story on Off being over because we didn't want to exacerbate the situation in hopes that Off would kind of reform and come back at full strength. Well, that has sort of happened. Off has released their Metallica cover. They covered the Metallica track Holier Than Thou from the 53-track Metallica Covers album, which is astoundingly long, where 53 bands cover songs from the Black album, sometimes 7 or 8 times in a row. Anyways, Off did actually kind of a mini movie with it, which we'll talk about in a minute. But also, equally surprisingly, perhaps more surprisingly, Off has a new lineup. Off's lineup is now Keith Morris, Dimitri Coates, two founding members, and two new fellows. Autry Fulbright of by the Trail of the Dead on bass, and Justin Brown of Thundercat on drums. Stephen McDonald of Red Cross and Mara Rubalcaba of Earthless are no longer with the band, shockingly, to me anyways. I've got a lot of mixed emotions. Hallie Bullitt, do you have mixed emotions?
I like Off. I don't have the same like emotional connection to Off, so it's like the lineup change. I mean, anytime a band changes the lineup, you're a little bit like, well, okay, what's this going to be moving forward? But I really enjoyed this cover so much that it just made me feel like, all right, well, whoever's playing it off right now, then I like it. But again, I don't have like the same, you know what I mean, like I like that band, but I feel like you have like a very emotional like attachment to like what this band puts out and whether they're active and whether they're not. And so but I don't know, I thought this cover and the video were great. It was like really, really, really well done. You know, it's sort of like takes place in a, you know, the video is about the band finding out that they have a gig in, they have a new gig and they're so happy because COVID is over and they can finally play gigs again. And then it turns out that the gig is like a church mass and they have to go play in this church, and then sort of the plot thickens from there. But it's really well done. It tells like a funny story. Like I'm a little tired of the, like, I feel like now anytime I see a priest show up in like a music video, a movie, a TV series, anytime there's a priest, I'm like, oh man, this priest is going to have diddled somebody, or this priest is going to try to diddle somebody. Like, I just know that that's going to be like what's going to happen. And then it always does. But, you know, the problem is that priests keep diddling people. And so this continues to be a relevant thing that people need to like make, you know, artistic and social commentary on. But yeah, I thought I really, really enjoyed this. So it just made me excited to see whatever Off is, you know, to see what else they're going to be doing now. John, were you in turmoil over this?
I was. There's many things to unpack here. First of all, let's address the thing that Hallie mentioned. Is I agree with Hallie. Like the corrupted priest is a tiresome cliche, and I'm over it. I'm over it. You know. However, this arguably the funny thing is now the people that claim moral authority, and many times they are morally right, use pentagrams. You know, almost ironically, but like, the pentagram has been used so many times. it's not even ironic anymore. It's just like a worn out symbol. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like all the, you know, Planet X style. I mean, I know Planet X is still around, but Planet X Gilman bands, they almost all use pentagrams almost ironically or even not ironically, just without any true purpose, you know, just just to be, they use the pentagram to say they're in opposition to the general status quo. Mm-hmm. You know, and so the pentagram is almost like in the 80s, the pentagram was a scary symbol. And like there was a million talk shows with kids with pentagrams on their T-shirts. And like, you know, Sarah Jesse Raphael would be like, why are you wearing a pentagram on your T-shirt? And now like no one even bats an eye at that. You know, I would think this is really interesting because it subverts that. And here's why. Off is hired to play a church, plays a church. There is a diddling. Well, actually, he's not a diddler. He's actually, which I thought was tasteful. He goes after hot women and steals from the collection basket, which I, you know, whatever, funny. Yeah. I thought the video was extremely funny, honestly. But interestingly, the priest isn't actually a priest. He's a devil. And in fact, when Off starts playing, the subversion is they're not satanic or evil. Their music is holy, and Jesus shows up, and I think he's black, which is interesting and funny.
Yeah.
And Jesus destroys the devil and saves the people, you know, which is interesting because where the vast majority of, all, I'll say, quote, moral music has been like the church is evil, church is bad, pentagrams are cool, Off is saying the church is cool, holiness is cool, and we will defeat evil using Jesus type powers, which is an interesting subversion.
Using a Metallica cover.
Using a Metallica cover, you know.
Defeat all evil using a Metallica cover. No, it really is a clever video. It's like really well done.
So I dug the video a lot. I thought the song was very good. I thought it's way better than the Metallica version. Somebody mm-hmm. in the comment section says, oh, I thought I actually might like Metallica and then I listened to the original. Like I did not, you know. So Off did a killer job here. And I bet you Off didn't even like pick this track because Off, you know, when we looked at the bands that were on this covers album, it was a lot of cool bands. And Off is a cool band, but they're not as cool as like, you know, Thundercat or whatever. And so it's interesting that so I think they were probably assigned this track and Off just kind of knocked it out of the park. I thought the Off boys did a really good job on this. But here's why I have mixed emotions. I love Off. Off is one of my all-time favorite bands of all time. I love Off. I've seen them live. Actually, only about 6 or 7 times, but I've seen them in every phase. And I actually saw like the third ever Off show before they even put out any music. It was at the who's that famous tattoo guy? What's his name? Crap. Sailor Jerry.
I was gonna say Sailor Jerry, but I thought that was not. I thought you were talking about something more current than that. I was like, you can't be talking about Sailor Jerry. That's like so old. Yeah.
In law school, you have to take what's called an ethics exam, and it's not what it sounds like. What it is, it's basically like, is a judge allowed to, you know, go investigate the scene of a crime himself? You know, if you have two clients and one client wants to sue the other, what are you supposed to do? So. Basically, you study for that for about 2 weeks or maybe even a week and then take the ethics exam. And while studying for the ethics exam, I was a huge Circle Jerks and Black Flag fan. And so it was like Off's third ever show that was being put on by Sailor Jerry. And it was part of like the Sailor Jerry documentary, which was kind of dumb. Anyways, so Off comes out and I'm like studying like right before Off plays, you know, and Off comes out. They only did like 5 songs and they closed it out actually with a cover of the Stooges TVI, except for Keith Morris didn't sing. So they really only played for like 12 minutes and it was so awesome. The reason I bring up the ethics exam is because I passed by like 1 point, which most like it's considered an easy exam that most people pass by like 15 points. But I also saw No Doubt like the next day. And I was studying at No Doubt, you know, but I passed and it's a pass fail exam. So I used my time wisely. I didn't overstudy. Anyways, so I've been a fan since day 3 of Off. I've seen them in all the incarnations. I'm going to brag right here. If you get the original press of Off's Wasted Years, their best album, there's a sticker on it and there's a quote talking about the album. Guess who wrote that quote? Me for Rolling Stone Magazine. And that is my quote is right next to Raymond Pettibon's art, and that's one of the highlights of my – it's probably one of my top 3 writing things ever, you know. And I'm super psyched. I love Off. Keith Morse is the man. Keith Morse is so cool. And he's down to talk to Punk News even though he's a legend. He's the man, you know. And I love – and I also love the original version of Off because Mario Rubalcaba, honestly, I don't really care about him that much. I mean, like, I don't hate him or dislike him. But, you know, he's a great drummer, but I don't really have any connection to Earthless. But I thought it was so cool to have Stephen McDonald of Red Cross in Black Flag because – I mean, in off, because Black Flag and Red Cross used to be kind of like pals back in the day. And then several members of Red Cross formed Circle Jerks with Keith Morris. So it was almost like the final part of the combination was Red Cross and Keith Morris, you know, because, of course, Ron Reyes was in Red Cross and went into Black Flag. And Greg Hessen was in Red Cross that went into Circle Jerks. So it was like the circle is now complete. I'm very sad to see that Steve McDonald is gone. The new guys do sound great. I would say it sounds slightly different. It's got a little bit more of a, I don't want to say grungy, but a heavier, dirtier sound, where I think Steve McDonald and Mario Rubicava had a bit more snap, particularly Steve McDonald, because he's very much a poppy guy. So I'm very sad to see him going. I don't have any inside info, but we can do a lot of reading between the lines here. Is what happened was about 5 or 6 years ago, Mario Rubicava couldn't tour with Off because he had a few gigs set up with Earthless. And on Facebook, Keith Morris was like, well, you know, our drummer's not coming because he had other commitments. So we've got Dale Crover of the Melvins coming, which there was about 8 or 10 of those shows. And one of those shows, I think it was New Year's, it was Red Cross into Off into the Melvins, which was probably the greatest show ever. And Ricky Frankel didn't go, and I will forever hold that against him, even though he could have went. And so Dale Crover drummed with Off for a little while, and I'm sure it was totally awesome. But what happened after that is Off sort of went on hiatus for a little while after, quite sadly, after Off tried to fund their movie, and it fell 25 grand short of like $200,000. And they didn't just do, we'll take the money anyways, and we'll give the money back, which I know if they said, we'll just keep the money anyways, the original Off would still be together. You know, that's so frustrating. You know, no one would have cared. You know, I mean, they
could have. You don't think anyone would have cared? I think people would have cared.
No, I'm saying if they had done it in that, even if we fall short, we keep the money and we'll still try to make the movie. You know what I mean?
Oh, I see what you're saying. I thought you were just saying like they're like, well, we're not making the movie, but we're keeping your money.
No. Oh, God. People would be so upset. People would whine forever. I'm upset because I didn't get my handwritten Keith Morris lyrics, which I was willing to pay $100 for, but because people couldn't – because people would rather spend $400,000 on the Harry Potter album that came out the same week instead of Off punk rock legends. I'm still bitter about that.
It is a shame. It really is a shame. It would have been cool.
So I'm still bitter about that. I'm glad Off is continuing. However, so anyways – When Off sort of went on hiatus and the Circle Jerks kind of arose, Steve McDonald started playing with the Melvins because he had played with Dale Crover and Off. And the Melvins said, Steve, if you're not doing anything, come play with the Melvins. You know, and so I don't know, but I think probably some tensions arose there because maybe Steven McDonald had to choose between the Melvins and Off. And frankly, Melvins probably make a little bit more money. And also the Melvins are extremely systematic in that they know how much money they got to make. They know how many shows they're going to do. They have all their plans planned out 2 years in advance. Buzz Osborne has spoken about that a lot. So honestly, like if you got a mortgage or whatever, can you go? You're choosing between two totally awesome bands. Maybe you want to go with a slightly more stable band. You know, the twist there, though, and I'm not trying to hex anybody, is after Mark Dutrum left the Melvins in the early 2000s, the Melvins said, we will never have a full-time bass player again. The Melvins are just Buzz and Dale because we're tired of bass players having drug problems and us having to fire them. So now it's going to be Buzz and Dale, and we'll have guest bass players. And so they brought in a bunch of guest bass players. And this is me totally guessing and reading between the lines. The Melvins played with Big Business for a while as a four-piece. That went on for like 6 or 7 years. And I think Big Business kind of sort to start to think, well, we're totally in the Melvins now. Even though everything's temporary, we're in the Melvins. But then what happened is one of the Big Business guys had a kid, so he couldn't go on tour. So the Melvins then didn't bring either of Big Business on tour and brought in a new bassist, Trevor the guy from Mr. Bungle, Trevor
Dunn.
Trevor Dunn, right. And then they had the guy from Butthole Surfers. And then, you know, once Off went on hiatus, they brought in Steve McDonald. Steve McDonald's been a Melvin for about 5 or 6 years now. And I love the Melvins with Steve McDonald. And I wonder if Steve McDonald's starting to think, well, maybe I am a Melvin. I'm just hoping – well, A, I'm hoping that Steve McDonald doesn't find himself not in the Melvins if he's assuming that he's in the Melvins. And I'm sure he's a grown man. I'm sure he's got this all figured out because he doesn't need my advice, you know. But I'm just saying is I hope that doesn't happen. And I'm sad that Steve isn't in Off. And also I'm sad that it appears that Keith and Steve maybe aren't friends anymore, which is very sad because they go all the way back to 1979, you know, and I love that dynamic. I love the dynamic of Keith Morris and Steve McDonald in a band together, and now it's no more. The new band sounds good and sounds great, so I'm excited about that, but it's bittersweet for me. And more, what's your perspective? And I just spoke about 25 minutes on off.
As well you should. That's your band, man.
I'm really glad that they're back and they're not they're putting out music and they have plans and they're still gonna make a movie. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's gonna be really good. I thought that the new lineup sounded really good. I loved this song. It was so good. I have never heard the original version, and I don't plan to. But this was just, it was really good. I liked the movie music video kind of thing. I thought it was really cool how, like, they had, what's his name?
Angelo Moore?
Yeah, they had him... in the cameo, and the guy who played the priest,
David Yao, Jesus Lizard.
Yeah, that was really cool how they had like all these people and stuff. And then I hate, like, David Yao played it so well, and it was just like, you know, like you just feel like gross and slimy. And then when his like skin started like, you know, like kind of coming off, it was like, yes, they're doing something. And then like rock Jesus showed up, and like it was awesome. I really liked it. I thought it was really good. Oh, and then Keith Morris like healing people, I thought that was great. And the two altar boys, and they take off the robe and they have the off shirts on, I thought that was great too. The whole video was really good. The whole song was really good. And like, do they have a heavier sound because they're covering Metallica, or is that like going to be their new direction? That was something I was just kind of wondering, but like, I guess we'll find out soon, so that's exciting. So I'm looking forward to everything.
Good question. Fair enough. And while you're on a roll, tell us about King Woman.
All right, so King Woman is a band fronted by Christina Esfandiari, and they just released a music video for Psychic Wound. So the video is a bunch of, like, there's some blood and there's some like women, and she's there, and she looks gorgeous in the video, and the whole video is really cool, and it's like Elizabeth Bathory inspired. So there's like sort of a vampire-y tone, sort of. And it's off Celestial Blues. So Celestial Blues is based on, like, loosely based on Paradise Lost by John Milton. So that's really cool. I saw that in an interview, and it's like, it's going to be so cool, because the previous single that was released... Oh, what's it called? I don't remember.
Morning Star.
Yeah, Morning Star. And she's like, you know, I'm Lucifer, and it's all that kind of stuff. And it's just, it's so good. And then she started King Woman because she had it sounds really scary, like religious upbringing, like exorcisms were performed on her when she was a kid, like all this kind of stuff. So King Woman was a way to deal with it too. The song is nuts. I love the song. I've listened to it a lot, and like, you know, she goes from kind of like this like nice, like kind of breathy, clean voice, and then she like screams, and it's like, oh my gosh, like this is amazing. This is so cool. One of the things that I thought was kind of interesting on Punk News, one of the comments, like somebody said, oh, I regret clicking on the video or whatever. And then somebody responded with, if this was a Danzig video, it would be a masterpiece. So it's like, yeah, what makes it different? Like,
I can think of one thing, and a lot of people kind of try to push that aside, but I can think of one thing that's different, and people won't admit it, but we all know the truth, and if you just come out and say it, make at least Styles, the hoity-toities, and you know, the edgelord type characters. The Punk News readers are awesome. The Punk News podcast listeners are super awesome, right? But we got some commenters now that are straight up misogynistic and even homophobic and all that bullshit. And honestly, like 10 years ago, I was the strongest defender. We got to have a comment section. Everyone's closing down the comment section. You know, freedom of speech, let's let people have their say. But people just, the vast majority, a lot of commenters are not using the podcast. I mean, the comment section. We got a lot of creeps commenting, and they're chasing away the good people. And honestly, like, over the past 3 or 4 years, it actually sort of has given Punk News a reputation, which is unfair, because if you go on any website's Facebook, it's all creeps, you know. But for some reason, Punk News gets that reputation. And so the point being is, we got a bunch of edgelord misogynistic creeps that sort of use this like a platform of virtue and try to make a quote logical argument and dance around what they're really trying to say because they're creeps. But we all know what they're saying. So where was I going with this? I don't know. The comment section. Maybe it's time to nuke it. As much as I hate to say that, I don't see much value in the comment section these days. I'm sorry, Anmore. Go ahead. I hijacked this.
No, that was good. Because exactly, like, the song is great. Her vocals are great. The band sounds awesome. Like, the lyrical content is no different. You know what I mean? Like, it bothers me because it's like, listen to it, watch it, and like, enjoy it. Like, you know, she's in control of everything. She's the figure in power. It's not like she's, again, I'm not, I like Danzig. Danzig's cool, but she's not like, you know, like his love interest in a video. Like, you know, she's her own central character and everything. So, yeah, I thought this was great. Hallie, what did you think?
Yeah, I like this. It reminded me, like, again, yeah, it definitely has, like, the vampire, like, tones. It kind of gave me, like, a Suspiria vibe, that, yeah, like, old vampire movie. I did like this, but, man, that first single, Morningstar, and that video, I, like, kind of can't get enough of. I think that was, like, the thing that I was, like, oh, this band is amazing. That video is just like one take and she's singing. She's just, the art direction is gorgeous. She's in like this, like, absolutely crazy gothy, like, kind of, I don't even know how to explain her look. It's very like gothy, like 90s gothy, but, you know, and that camera is just kind of circling around her and she's just singing. It's so simple, but it's just visually really striking. And that first single is definitely just my favorite song. I think it's awesome. So yeah, I think this band was super interesting. And yeah, her like religious upbringing sounds so oppressive. And like, I read an article with her where it's like she couldn't even like keep journals when she was growing up, and so she's just an artist with like a lot of stuff to work out and a lot of thoughts and like really interesting imagery to just put out there, and I'm here for it, man.
Well, there you have it.
John, did you like it? Is this, yeah, did you like it?
No, I just didn't like it. No, I thought this was cool. I get the Danzig thing imagery, and I didn't even think of that, but yeah, it is very Danzig-esque. Musically, though, kind of remind me of like Hellhammer or Neurosis, like that super heavy, super crackling type stuff. And yeah, I think it's real cool, and I dig it. I bet you this band's awesome live. Like, I bet you this band is like amazing live. Oh, so yeah, yeah, so it's cool. So yes. Here's another band that I think is awesome, that I know is awesome on record and live, Catbite. I would say the polar opposite, imagery, lyrically, aesthetic-wise, to King Woman, Catbite. Catbite's got a new album coming out. It's called Nice One, as opposed to King Woman's Welcome, Here Comes Satan, Riding the Morning Star. So anyways, Catbite's new album is called Nice One. It's out August 6th via Bad Time Records. It's their second album following Catbite and two separate versions of the Catbite album, Catlight and Catfight. Listen, people, I don't say I called this one day one, but I called this one day three. I threw one of Catbite's first ever shows. I reviewed them before anybody else reviewed them, I think. I put out one of the very first cassettes. I love this band. And it is crazy how much they've blown up in the past. Like, in the past 3 months, this band has gone from, like, a local Philly band to, like almost a national band. You know what I mean? Like, I can't believe how, like, crazy, like, the press was all over part of it is because Brooklyn Vegan posted about them, and like I said, I like Brooklyn Vegan and Brooklyn is Vegan cool. People see Brooklyn Vegan sort of as a marquee of cool, which is fine. They have good taste generally, I'd say. So when Brooklyn Vegan kind of picked them up, then I think they got a little bit cooler and got a little bit more exposure that way. Whereas if you're on Punk News, people just see, oh, it's a ska band or whatever. But if you're on Brooklyn Vegan, well, you know, you're cooler or whatever. So I'm excited for this. I think this is great. I think the video is very 90s-esque, but in a good way. It's basically like this little, like, I don't know, 9-year-old kid going around like beating people for money and like doing 3-card Monty with Pokemon cards and like trying to pick up chicks even though he's like 9 and like robbing stores and stuff. I think the video is great. I think the song is great. I'm excited for the new album, but I do have I'm psycho, and there's a tinge of sadness in the back of my brain, which we will discuss in a minute. But Hallie Bullet, Catbite, did you dig this, or did you feel put on?
No, I liked it fine. I liked it fine. It sounded like very poppy ska. I thought the video was cute. I did really like that. Wasn't that the singer from Bite Me Bambi is like getting out of the car in that one, the one scene, like the kid can kind of confronts her or something, right?
Well, he's trying to pick her up.
Yeah. I like that. I really like that. Not everything has to be political, but I do just feel like there's a history of women in music. There, you know, women have often been made to feel that there's only room for so many women, and there can be a competitiveness sometimes with, you know, you've got like two bands that are in the exact same scene. They're both gaining some buzz. And I just like loved that that singer was in this video. I thought it was awesome. It was like, no, we are on the same team. We're part of the same scene. We're like building the same like genre of music back up again. We're like trying to get it, you know, like bring it back. And I thought that was really cool. I don't know if I'm like making too big a deal out of it or not, but, I thought that was neat. I also thought it was – oh, what were you going to say, John?
The mother at the end is also a singer in a ska band.
Oh, is that right? Who is that?
Yes. It's another L.A. band. I'll see if I can look up the name. Okay. It's like – I'll try to figure it out, but go ahead.
Well, I thought it was interesting because we just were talking about comment sections. I thought it was really interesting that Catbite had disabled the comments on – this video, and it was kind of refreshing to me. It just was like, I was like, oh man, are we like maybe moving into a new era where I like don't have to read like mean internet comments? That would just be such a relief to me. I'm like, I mean, every now and then internet comments are amazing. The reason I scanned them was because I was hoping that somebody, because I was like, is that the woman from Bite Me Bambi? And I was like, oh, I'll just look at the comments, because if it is, I bet someone will have said something about it. And then I was like, oh, there are no comments. But I don't know. I find it refreshing. I'm kind of ready. Listen, John, I'm not telling you guys what to do at Punk News, but I'm saying I, as a person, I'm really kind of ready to move on from internet comments. I just, you know, they just aren't. People that are positive people with a lot going on in their lives, I just tend to, I think, maybe not have time to make a lot of internet comments. So it just sort of falls to sort of like, I don't know. Those are my thoughts about it.
I used to make this point like 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, and I kind of forgot why I stopped making this point. Is Hallie Bullet, in your entire life, have you ever, ever, ever gone onto any website and made a mean internet comment out of the blue like people do? Ever in your entire life?
Literally never. Yeah.
And like I said, I've met 2 trolls, or maybe 3, in life. And I'm not gonna go into it again. But I've met 2 or 3 trolls in person, and it is exactly who you think it would be. It's never Jello Biafra. It's never Gwen Stefani. You know what I mean? It's yes. Never the singer of Catbite. It's no. Who you think it would be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's never Mick Jagger. It's never Danzig.
I would love to read Mick Jagger's internet comments. I would just love to know what he would say just about the internet in general.
Word on the street, and there's an article about this, and it's not verified. Apparently, like, David Bowie used to go on like soccer like websites and like talk about soccer with people a lot as David Bowie.
Oh, that's sweet. Oh. That's cute.
And more, Catbite. Yes. Do you love him? Do you hate him? Will you go on the internet and talk and put a mean internet comment below their video?
No, we need a like a commenter Thunderdome or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called Punk News.
But just have like the opposite of navel gazing. Just like have at it. No, Catbite, they have really grown on me. I like the song a lot. I like the video a lot. To the little kid with the bat is the best, and then like he's like all tough, and then he gets like dragged in by his mom at the end. That was just great. Yeah, like, it's so like energetic, and it's so good. I really like it. With their the Catfight hardcore cover album, I really liked that too. I thought that was really good. So I'm excited to hear more from them, and I really like the cover of the album too, like the blue and like all the eyes and stuff. I think it looks really cool.
Done by Nicole Salzer, a famous, not famous, semi-famous Philadelphia artist.
That's so cool. Nice.
Yeah, Hallie, do you know Nicole Salzer? You might. There's a connection between you and her.
I don't. I want to look up and see if I recognize her art, though. Hold on. What's the connection?
We'll talk about it afterwards because for example, between me and, let's say, Danzig, like there's maybe 5 degrees of connection between me and Danzig.
Yeah.
Connection number 3 that none of us know directly is probably a creep. You know what I mean? And so that's your connection, quite sadly. You know, so.
Nice.
Anyways. Way to tank that conversation, John. listen, so here's my existential crisis, and I'm being insane, and I know I'm being insane. And so basically, Hallie and Em, I want you to tell me that I'm being insane. So Punk News has often changed – well, there's a thing in the 90s where people would get mad when their favorite bands would get big, and I swore to myself I would never do that. You want your favorite bands to get big so they have success and you know, are able to appreciate – all the cool things that they've made and get rewarded for that. There are a few things sadder than an amazing band that never broke through and were always broke or whatever. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you always want your favorite bands to get big. And I this is a feeling I have to fight against is you do feel like a certain ownership, like, oh, I wrote about this band before anybody. I threw one of their first shows, you know? So you almost get this weird ownership of the band, but you don't own the band. They would have become just as big or even bigger without your intervention. So you have no ownership of the band. You were just lucky enough to be standing in the right space at the right time to see something cool. You know what I mean? But So that's a feeling I have to fight against to a degree. And it's never really caused me trouble. But here's the thing. Here's where I get bummed out. There have been a number of bands at Punk News that Punk News wrote about beforehand and we used to be pals with. And we used to email once in a while and maybe have them on the podcast every 4 or 5 months. Or when we used to do kind of wackier articles, we would have them be part of our wackier articles. And then they get bigger and bigger. And then they stop answering emails and they never come back. You know what I mean? And you know, they'll go on to other websites, you know, Consequence of Sound or Pitchfork, and Punk News doesn't hear from them at all anymore. And not that you don't want your favorite bands to go on Consequence of Sound, Brooklyn Vegan, Pitchfork. That's cool, you know, but it's like, well, maybe you can stop by once a year or so, you know, that would be nice. And sometimes they don't. And there's one specific instance where this happened. 3 bands blew up at the same time, and there used to be a punk around Punk News all the time, and then they totally shut off, you know, totally. And it really, really bummed me out. It took me a little while. I don't say to get over it, but it took me a little while to kind of not have a grudge or an annoyance, you know.
Sure, yeah.
And what was going on in the background, though, is they all signed to a label, and either the label head or the publisher or both, I don't know if this is true or not, but I had 3 separate sources say, oh, yeah, they tell their bands don't talk to Punk News because they want to kind of get out of that scene, you know, which really bummed me out. And you say, well, maybe, John, that's just you being paranoid. And I would be saying I'm paranoid, except for my paranoia, it tends to be accurate because once one of those acts was no longer on that label, I said, let's see if they'll do an interview. I reached out to them. Bam. Right back. The label said, yeah, let's do it. The new label said, yeah, let's do it. Quite sadly, the person doing the interview was a younger person who had hadn't done that many interviews, but I thought they were able to do. Like, I thought they would be able to handle the interview, and they just I should have it was my bad call. I should have done the interview with the younger person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was just an awkward and bad interview. So that kind of screwed the pooch a little.
It's a bummer. Yeah.
But it does bum me out when bands. Not that they got to be around all the time. Not that they can't go on to other places and become bigger and better, because I certainly want that. But it'd be nice if you came back once in a while, just once in a while. I will say for Catbite is I have gotten no inclination that they would do that. And in fact, I've gotten the opposite response from them. But I'm a little paranoid and I'm a little crazy, and it would bum me out if Catbite went away and never came back. What complicates it is their publicist. I probably shouldn't even say this. I suspect is one of the people that blacklisted Punk News 3 or 4 years ago.
But
now, am I psycho and paranoid and crazy? Maybe I am.
Well, because so far you're saying you're getting no indication from the band that they're gonna like ghost on the site, right?
And you don't want to be like weird and clingy either. You'll be like, you guys don't want to talk to Punk. You know what I mean? but it is a bummer when you know these people. You think they're cool. You think their art is rad, and you wrote about them when they were first. So you'd like to maintain some sort of connection, just out of your own self satisfaction, Sure. And sometimes that gets cut off. And maybe I shouldn't even have that. Not right, but that sense of connection. Like you know what I mean? Like, when you're writing about a band, you shouldn't be writing about the band because you want to be friends with the band, And in fact, that's detrimental to a good article. You know what I mean? If anything, it's two people using each other for their own detriment. I mean, benefit, which is really how it's supposed to work, So I don't know.
Well, it's like, and it's different from the scenario you were describing before, where just like random fans get like angry that like suddenly a band that they like is liked by other people, and that band might possibly be actually like getting to make a small living off of their music. But like, it is different from that because, like you said, those fans, it's like they have a personal connection to the band, and especially if it's a band that they saw come up from nothing or they felt like they supported from the beginning, they feel like they were an original backer, like an original investor in this project. But it's like you said, as a fan, like you personally did not make or break this band. And like, but what you're saying, John, is different. It's like you are so generous in helping bands that are like up and coming. Like you are generous with your time and you're enthusiastic. You really give people a lot of support if you like what they're doing. So I think that's different. I do think you have a right to be, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be hurt about it because it just like kind of is what it is. And I don't like the idea of you like having your feelings hurt, but I think you have a right to sort of raise an eyebrow at that and be like, really? Because, we were the ones writing about you and no one else was. It does seem like there's a relationship there, that there's a bit of a betrayal if bands just completely up and like walk away from that relationship.
You nailed it, but, maybe I'm being psycho, and it is easy to hurt my feelings. I am a very sensitive person. That being said, every time that happens, I have to say to myself, you know what? Band XYZ isn't around anymore, but you know who is? Keith Morris is still around. Jello's still around. Black Daddy's still around. I don't want to say like one of the greatest things ever, but it was so cool when Boots Riley of The Coup, Punk News used to interview Boots and write about The Coup kind of when they were at their least famous, which was kind of near their last album and before their last album, just because, they never really popped. I mean, they were an amazing, amazing band with amazing music, but it just didn't break through to the mainstream like a lot of people were hoping it would. And so we would interview Boots about that. I mean, not about that, but, we would interview Boots, and he was around and he was cool. And then he put out one of the greatest music of all time ever made, Sorry to Bother You. And I said, and basically it was the number 5 in the movie theaters. That doesn't sound that big of a deal. But above it was like Fast and Furious, Star Wars, Up, and like something like all Disney movies. So it was all Disney movies and the Boots movie, an independent film, which was huge. And I said, I bet you Boots is just going to kind of blow us off. And Boots did not. And I really appreciated that. Like, just a 15-minute interview or whatever. So like that meant a lot to me. You know what I mean? Just like, Boots, thanks, man. I appreciate that. So,
Hell yeah.
So, not everyone's going to act exactly how you want them to act. That's life. You know what I mean? So, but Penny Rimbaud, Keith Morse, Jello, they're still around. I'll take those guys over some of the other acts that I was alluding to that I didn't name every single day of the week, So I don't know. Anyway, Catbite rules. Not that Catbite has exhibited any of these symptoms, but I'm just saying is it's we're in the middle of that track that I've seen happen before, you know.
Can I tell like a quick story in regards to the like fans feeling like betrayed by a band getting big? Like, did you ever hear about the show, either of you guys? It was a show at Coney Island High, which was like a legendary punk club on St. Mark's Place in the East Village in New York City. And I was like at this show that I feel like people must still talk about, where Rancid made like a surprise appearance. They were not, you know, Rancid had like long, they were playing much bigger venues. Like they would generally play like the Roseland in New York City when they came through town. Like they were, they had really blown up and they were no longer playing littler clubs like Coney Island High, but they came like unannounced and joined on to like another bill and just kind of came on stage. And this crowd of punks, these like East Village, like shitty punks, literally physically attacked them. I watched people like jump up on stage and start trying to beat up Rancid, and they had to take their guitars and flee backstage, and there was nearly a riot at the show, and the crowd was like screaming like sell out. Like people were like losing their damn mind because this band, you know, because it was like they were punks and they were on MTV, and like, you know, it's like, it's so funny because it's like I get how you feel like your scene is your scene, and you do subscribe to the ethics of like doing stuff for the love of it and not for the money, but it's like to have such like hatred towards a band for actually having made it, which is like so unusual and such a like beautiful dream to come true for a band. It's like to be so hateful about that. I just like couldn't believe my head was in my hands. I just like couldn't believe what I was seeing. But I feel like the 90s were particularly bad for that. Just everyone was like, you know, especially it's like, cause right. That was when punk broke. That's when punks were like, some punks were making a lot of fucking money, a lot of money. And I don't know if people just got so worked up about it, but I always feel like that was so, like, John, did you ever hear about that show? Because it was like, it was such a fiasco. It was like that's, nearly like I nearly watched Rancid like get their asses kicked. It was so bizarre.
That show briefly mentioned in Architect of Self-Destruction, the
original amazing track. Oh,
Brad
Logan, that's so
roadie
awesome.
In for Rancid at that show.
Oh my God. So I can't wait to read what he said about it. It was just being in the crowd. It was completely nutters. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was like, this has gone too far, people.
did you go to the Beastie Boys show at Coney Island High?
I didn't. I fucking wish that I had. But I'll tell you, I still can't hear correctly out of my right ear because I saw the Ramones at Coney Island High and I stood right on the fucking bench right in front of the speaker. And I'm like, listen, talk to me in 30 years if I actually have lost my hearing in that ear altogether. But as of now, I have no regrets about it.
Well said. You know what? Let's play a tune and come back. Hal, you want to play a song or you want me to play a song?
You play a song, because my song like relates to a thing we're going to talk about later.
You know, I'm going to play some Rancid, because I do beat on Rancid a little bit on the podcast, but Rancid is a cool band. I mean, listen, let's be real. Rancid is a cool band. They've got some bad stuff, but some great stuff. Let's play something from Rancid 5. In the Army of Babylon, I'm Don Giovanni by Rancid.
Chewing at my feet, trying to protect this side of the sea. Well, Army of Babylon, come out to ball, yeah. Army of Babylon, come out to ball, yeah. Come out to ball, yeah. Come out to ball, yeah.
That was Rancid. Very deep cut that no one's ever heard about. Speaking of a buzz band, Amon the Sniffers, they've announced album number 2 following their first album. The new album is called Comfort to Me, and it's out September 10 via a whole bunch of different labels depending what state you're in. I mean, what country. I think America's ATO, UK is Rough Trade. Australia might be Rough Trade. They've debuted their first song and video, Guided by Angels, which also opens the album. This is a very anticipated album because Amon the Sniffers, their second EP was gigantic. Then the album after that was pretty big, and people I loved it. I didn't like it at first, and I loved it. And now here's the next album, and the second album can be the most difficult album for many a bands. Authors to and more Amon the Sniffers. What did you think of this video? What did you think of the song? And are you excited, or is the party over?
Oh no, where's them?
Maybe she fell off. Maybe she said she didn't have. Let me see if I can add her back on. When's the last time she spoke? Have we been talking for like 3 hours? And she
we kind of have. Yeah.
well, I'm bringing M back on right now, and I'll talk about it. I love Amon the Sniffers. I think the last album was absolutely fantastic. I didn't like it so much at first because it was less punky and more hardcore. And one of the things that I liked about Amon the Sniffers is that they were very punky and hooky. And then the new album was so jacked up. After it kind of clicked, after about 2 or 3 plays, I'm like, this record is fantastic. Short, savage. And plus the singer, Amy Taylor, she's so unique. She's kind of got like the crazy singer thing going, which is pretty much my favorite kind of singer, the crazy singer. And she's got a great voice, and she's great with lyrics and great with rhythm or melody or however you want, like snappy lines, if you will. That being said, I like this track. I didn't love it. I've got a bit of fear with regards to this new album. I think of Downtown Boys. The Downtown Boys second album, which was the big one, Full Communism, was an amazing, amazing, amazing album. I still rock that album. Short, snappy, punchy, unique, weird, very punk. The one after that was produced by, I think it was a guy from Fugazi or Brendan Kane. I think it was Guy from Fugazi, one of the Fugazi guys. And honestly, the songs were a little bit slower, a lot longer. The production wasn't as hot. And I just thought, like the snap and the magic is kind of gone. And then I saw Downtown Boys Live do some of those songs. And live, those songs were almost as good as the first album song. So it really was the production. A lot of times, punk bands, especially cool punk bands that might have some backing that we don't like to talk about, secret backing for, at this point, unclear reasons. Sometimes they're like, oh, after you do your punk album, then you do your mature post-punk album. I fear that this might be the mature post-punk album. That being said, if this first track is just kind of mid-tempo and the track after that is like super fast and crazy, then it'll be an amazing album. That being said, this track I thought was a little too mid-tempo, a little too long, not quite snappy enough, not quite weird enough. I wasn't blown away. I'm nervous, but I'm holding out hope. Hallie Bullet.
See, I loved this track. It is definitely, it has more of a post-punk vibe, though. You're like absolutely correct about that. But I like that stuff, so that didn't bother me, you know? It's so funny that you said how she seems like she's crazy, because that's literally that was like the thing that I loved about this video. So like, this video is like, she is just like singing a song, like yelling the lyrics, dancing, like kind of like taking her clothes off, like she's got this crazy mullet, she's like yelling, and like it's, and her, the rest of her band is just like calmly like sitting or standing just like around her for like the whole rest of the video. And I feel like they've used that contrast like very intentionally. And she's like talking about like her like guardian angels. Like I'm watching this, I'm like, oh, this person is unhinged, like in all the best ways. She truly seems like maybe she's just like operating on her own kind of wavelength. And I love it. I love it. I definitely feel like this is one of those songs that's definitely just like enhanced by the visuals of the video. I like really recommend people like checking out both at the same time, because this like really, really, really struck me. This really resonated with me. I just absolutely loved it. I thought it was great.
Well, there you have it. Did you like pre? You know, did you check out that band Priests from DC or Baltimore?
Yeah, they played Gethard's show like really early on, and I just like was completely I just found like their, and especially like the singer's performance, just be totally mesmerizing.
See, I agree, but then they went post-punk and I was just not that into it. Were you into the post-punk era of Priests?
You know, I didn't check it out. I didn't check it out, so I can't speak to it. But yeah, but I'm surprised to hear you say you just as a general rule aren't as into like the post-punk thing. Because I feel like I hear you talk about bands that you like that I would consider like kind of in that. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, no, M's back and we'll be with you 1 second. I like a lot of post-punk bands, but hi, Em.
Hi, Em. Can you hear us?
Sorry.
M's trying to find.
She traveled in time. She had to travel back in time to the guy that like hung the witches. She had to go tap him on the shoulder, and now she's back.
Em, can you hear us?
Come towards the let, Carol Ann. What's the let?
Well, while Em's trying to get resituated, I do like a lot of post-punk bands. But you know, when bands are so great at punk and hardcore, to me, when they go post-punk, it's almost like a retreat. You know, either get weirder and crazier or more unusual. Just don't get blander, if you will. Like, I like not to bang on Ceremony, because at least Ceremony took a chance. But like after Ceremony went from hardcore to post-punk, like you lost what was special about you. You know, but I mean, like what post-punk bands do you think I like that are post-punk bands? I'm just curious. Like Gang of Four? I love Gang of Four.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah, but see, Gang of Four is like so snappy and weird, you know? I don't feel this is snappy or weird. I feel this is just kind of ironed out a little. But maybe. I mean, listen, I'm not dogging. I'm just saying is maybe I'll be wowed. It did take me 3 listens to really love the first Amyl LP, and now I love the LP. So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. Here's a guy everybody always loves all the time, Billy Idol. He's going on tour. He's always on tour, more or less. Well, not always, but he's on tour a lot. The reason I wanted to add this is because, honestly, like about 3 or 4 record store days ago, Billy Idol put out a live record, which I didn't get, which I really regret not getting because I just listened to it for the first time, and I've never seen Billy Idol live. He still sounds amazing. Like, he still sounds like Billy Idol circa 1982. Amazing. Billy Idol rules. Most of the commenters hate him. Halle Bullet. Billy Idol, awesome punk guy that kind of, you know, got famous but was still kind of punk. Or did we all get played and he's just a pop guy masquerading as a punker? I like Billy Idol. I'm a big fan.
I love Billy Idol. I mean, I think both of those things can be true, right? Like I think he's a genuine punker. I mean, listen, we owe so much to this guy in terms of like his influence on culture and on music. I mean, I think he's genuine. I mean, sure, he can like, you know, he pulls some like cheesy moves sometimes, and he's definitely just released like some clunker material. I mean, that's really right. That's really the problem, is that he's released some material that's so questionable that it did make it just that. It made people question everything that he had put out before. But I think he's cool. And we talked about, I like him. I think he's cool. I think he really tries to like do interesting stuff, and sometimes as an artist you miss the mark on that, and that's fine. You know, I do think he does a little bit of like trend chasing. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which I think that's maybe why he gets a little bit of a reputation for being kind of cheesy, because I think people feel like, oh well, are you making this particular music because this is like what's coming out of you right now, or is this what you think is popular and you're trying to emulate that in some way that feels disingenuous? Like I get that, but I think he's cool. As you know, I loved that campaign he did for New York City to try to get people to stop idling. I thought that was great because it's good for the environment, and I like that he lent his name towards it. He can't possibly have thought that was like a super cool thing to do. I like that he did it. I like that he was willing to like lend his image and his name to this like pro environmental cause, sort of nerdy cause. And I don't know. I'm glad he's touring. He's playing this See Here Now Festival in Asbury. If I were to see him, it would definitely, the tickets to that are sold out, but generally when shows
are.
Yeah.
Man, I was going to go.
But generally when shows are in Asbury, I just go hang out on the boardwalk and I just listen to the music. And it's like a perfectly excellent way to enjoy some live music because you are on the beach. You're probably eating some like curly fries or like a big ice cream cone. And you're just like listening to great live music. And that's often how I do those like big live outdoor Asbury shows anyway. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm pro Billy Idol for sure. All the way.
Holy snaps. General admission, $200. Wow.
Yeah.
You can usually, I mean, honestly, listeners, I would never encourage you to do anything illegal, but you can usually kind of scam your way into those kinds of things if you're smart about it. You know, let's see here. Smashing Pumpkins, Billy Idol, Dirty Heads group. Yeah, honestly, not a lot of stuff that I'm really into here, you know. Patti Smith.
I've seen Patti Smith live within like the last 5 years and it was fucking amazing. I absolutely recommend that people go see her. She's still got it.
Yeah, I gotta see Patti. Have you seen Billy Idol?
I haven't never seen Billy Idol and would like love to, but I'm obviously not. I'm sold out of this show and probably wouldn't have spent that amount of money on it to begin with. So I'm just gonna have to listen to the boardwalk from the boardwalk and just that'll be my Billy Idol experience probably.
Honestly, Billy. People usually like bum out about festivals, but let me tell you, I think seeing Billy Idol at a festival is the way to go because it's going to be a cool. Not that you should worry about the crowd, but like you know, let me draw an example. I saw Alice Cooper at a theater show, and it was amazing, and Alice was amazing. But honestly, and maybe this is dick of me, but like I was the youngest person there by 30 years or more, and it like really bummed me out. Like the I was the only non-gray head in the audience. And like should I be is if like and I fear if you went and see Billy Idol it kind of might be like that, you know?
Yeah,
like when I went and saw Alice Cooper, like people were like standing up and people were like, why is everyone standing up? It's like, well, because it's a rock show, man. You know what I mean? It's like, and people are like, we'll leave before the encore so we can beat traffic. And I'm like, if you're leaving to like the on before an Alice Cooper encore, you deserve not to see it, you know? But like,
yes.
I don't know. So honestly, Billy Idol is probably the best to see at a festival and more. Billy Idol. Yes. Are you excited for his tour?
First of all, I am back. My computer crashed. I tried to get on another computer. It didn't work. So I am back.
Welcome back, Em.
Thanks. Billy Idol. So I remember my dad told me a story. He went to see him live and just said he was really bad. He showed up like 2 hours late and he couldn't stand up and... You know, all of that. So I assume
Well, you can tell you're dead. No.
I can assume he's gotten better since.
Oh my God, I love that your dad went to see like a completely non-functioning Billy Idol in concert. That's great.
And you weren't on, but like Kat and I just spent 10 minutes talking about how awesome Billy Idol is and how great he is live.
Oh my God. So yeah, like what's he like live? What does he do?
Oh, I don't know. I was just listening to like a live record he put out like 4 years ago, and it was like great, you know. So, anyways, I'd like to see Billy Idol. I don't want to spend $200 to see him as an opening act for the Smashing Pumpkins, but I don't know, man. we'll figure something out, boy. Me and you, we'll hang. Let's do one last story. Here's an act that people should be talking about now. Which is Marissa Paternoster of the Screaming Females. She's putting out a new EP that shipped yesterday, and I know this because I got a shipping notification that your noun EP is shipping. The EP is called In the Shade, and the title track is called In the Shade. And it also has the songs Heather and Speak to Me. Drumming is Angie Bolin, the new drummer for Sleater-Kinney, who I've been boycotting because I'm so mad at what they did to Janet. Even though I'd never really listened to Janet to begin with. But actually, Angie's a nice person and is cool and is a good drummer as well. So listen, people, I've said it before. I'm going to say it again. Marissa Paternoster is an angel in human form. She plays guitar like none other. She sings like none other. She writes songs like none other. She is so into and so is the rest of the Screaming Females, mind you, Jarrett and King Mike. If you want to talk about an amazing band with an insane amount of talent, you can talk about Rush, but Screaming Females is a little bit better, let me tell you people. Like, Screaming Females rules. There's so much talent in that band. And I mean, they're pretty popular. But why aren't they the biggest band in the world? Because they're too good. Because people would rather hear Foo Fighters than Marissa Paternoster just tear people's head off. They can't handle the awesomeness of Screaming Females, Paternoster, King Mike, and Jarrett. In the Shade, the new song. I dig it a lot. It's got kind of a college rock, spacey kind of feel. In Screaming Females, Mercer tends to rip it up. Her solo noun stuff is kind of more college rock, spacey, weirdy. I dig it. I think this is great. I'm psyched for this EP. Paternoster hasn't put out a bad thing in 20 years, 15 years. I don't know. This is great. I dig it. Hallie Bullet, what did you think of Nouns in the Shade?
Yeah, super, super great. And you're right. She's like, she's everything you don't expect her to be. She's just like such a banshee on stage. And then in person, she's just kind and sweet and funny and quirky and like incredibly genuine. All the people in that band. I'm super into this. There was like another vocalist that every article about this mentioned was going to be on it, and I had no idea who she was. Do you know what I'm talking about? It was like
Shanna Pauly.
Who is that?
I will.
Like every press release about this was like Shanna Pauly's on this. I was like, I don't know who that is.
I mean, I'm gonna be a total dick here. Do you know why every press release had that?
Why?
Because Punk News posted this article, because Punk News has their ear to the ground with regard to Noun, and then another website picked it up, and then bigger websites picked it up from the other website. If you look at all the other articles, they follow a specific format that someone
yes,
else.
Yes, John.
I'm generally not complaining about that. I mean, I think that's cool, because I went Screaming Females to be gigantic. That doesn't bother me at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
According to Discogs, the only thing Shannon Polly's ever done is Screaming Females.
Oh, okay.
And the reason this is how I guess misinformation can grow on the internet. The reason I put that in the article is because I looked at the records out of the state champion, and I just looked at the liner notes on the state champion, and I just put it in there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so everyone else is like, oh, also the singer, like maybe Shanna Pauly just like her roommate or somebody. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, but because
she's on Screaming Females stuff, and people are big, huge Screaming Females fans, then maybe they'll be like, oh yeah, okay, that person.
I don't think she is though. She's on two Noun records. And she's listed as doing something on Birds in Space on the Screaming Females record. Let me look right here. Piano on Birds in Space. Saxophone, Adrian Berry of Downtown Boys.
Nice.
So anyways, that's how disinformation grows. Is I just put in there because she's in the liner notes. And then everyone else is like, oh, you know.
I love it, but that's not the first time that's happened. We've talked about this before. Like, I've definitely read, like, much, much bigger publications having to essentially, like, quote Punk News because you broke the story. I love it.
Well, where I did have a certain trepidation with regards to Catbite, and I love Catbite, Screaming Female, listen, if Screaming Females never spoke to me ever again, I would be okay with that, because that's how much I love them as a band and their music. You know what I mean? I'd be like, what's that thing? It's like, if you love somebody, set them free. You know, I let Screaming Females go if it's in Screaming Females' best interest, because I love them that much.
That's so funny.
M's like, I hated this song. No, M, what'd you think of the song?
I thought it was really good. And, the video is awesome. It's like the Bart Simpson, like, paper mache head, or not paper mache head, but like the mask thing. It was great. And then like just walking around, and then there's a skateboard, and then there's the dance at the end, and then the wall with the graffiti, and it's like a really badly done Bart Simpson, and it says eat pant. The whole thing was just great. I'm really looking forward to this.
Fun fact, the video was directed by Dawn Riddle, which is her real name, which is a pretty cool real name, isn't it? Dawn Riddle.
Yes.
Dawn Riddle was the drummer for Bad Canoes, Mercer Paternoster's side.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing, amazing punk band, Bad Canoes, one of my favorite bands of all time. Amazing. I was actually a fan of Bad Canoes before I was Screaming Females. I didn't know that much about Screaming Females, and I saw Bad Canoes and my mind was blown. And then I became a fan of Screaming Females. And the first time I interviewed Screaming Females, they emailed me back is, we hope you like us as much as you like Bad Canoes.
That's amazing.
So anyway, but I love Screaming Females. Anyways, awesome band. Hallie Bullet, this has been a long episode, but that's fine because next week is Story Week, so we got to get out all the news today. So Hallie Bullet, play a tune, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap this bad boy on up.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, so we can all weigh in on whether Billy Idol is like modern Billy Idol is like a great artist or a total hack. I thought I would play the song that I really kind of like off his like 2014 release. This song is called Can't Break Me Down. You definitely, it's like, it's so great because it's like, it's Billy Idol. It's definitely Billy Idol. It's definitely got some like influences in there to me. It's like, I feel like on just in terms of like the production and some of the synth work, like I'm hearing like almost like that band Metric. You know, like some of it, like kind of like the production and some of the hook kind of sounds like that to me. And his voice is definitely like he's choosing like a little bit more of like a mellower, softer, like almost like a Future Islands like kind of a vibe. And so, but it's so interesting because of course all of those bands were all influenced by the 80s music that he and his generation made. So it's like it's really interesting to like I don't know, just like. It's like this like snake eating its own tail in a way that like musically I kind of like. So yeah, so this is Billy Idol. You know, take it for what it is, people. He's still making music, he's still trying, and this song is called Can't Break Me Down.
That's right.
know, he's still trying, people. He's still trying. Listen, I resoutly pro Billy. Emmore, any last things you want the listeners to know about or talk about or consider before Story Week next week?
Never trust technology.
True.
And sometimes it's not the content of the story, it's how it is told.
Well said. Hallie Bullitt, final words. Wrap it on up. What guidance, voice, or Billy Idol crusade do you have to tell the audience to wrap up this episode?
Okay, I'm gonna be quick because it's been a long one, but because we've talked about Asbury Park so much in this episode, both the See Here Now Festival and also every time I go to Asbury, I run into Marissa Paternoster. So I just wanted to talk up Asbury Park. Obviously anyone that lives around there knows that it's just like the best fucking place to go see shows. It's just absolutely the coolest scene. It's so fun. But there, if you're not around there and can't go to shows there, there's just also some cool music coming out of Asbury Park lately. There's this band Dentist that, like, if you're a fan of like little poppier stuff, maybe they sound like a lot like Best Coast to me meets maybe something punkier. Some of their tracks are punkier than like a Best Coast vibe. But also my friend Jay Insult has a band Nervous Triggers out of Asbury. It's just like a great place, great music, fun scene. Check out some of the stuff that's like coming out of there, I would say. And those are my thoughts.
Well, there you have it, and we will see you next week.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. The weekend comes, my cycle hums, ready to race to you. These days are ours.
Happy days.
These days are ours. Share them with me.
Goodbye, gray sky. Hello, blue. There's nothing can hold me when I hold you. Feels so right, it can't be wrong. Rocking and rolling all week long.